Luckily for you, the answer to the great question of life, the universe and everything is to be found in this podcast, A Worker's Guide to Everything. Sometimes cans, often bad language, always solid politics. This is the Trademark Belfast podcast. Listen out for Trademark regulars and very special comrade guests and fellow travellers talking all things lefty, Ireland and the world. We remain, as always, anti-sectarian, anti-racist and anti-fascist. Enjoy. Buenigi soltas. Hello and welcome once again to another Trademark podcast, The Worker's Guide to Everything, number 104. Joined today by two comrades of mine, Dr. Maeve McDade and Dr. Sean Byers, all the doctors in the house today. We're here today to talk about Scolcus Cli 2023, which was an event we had last weekend, a week before last, 8th to 10th of September on the beautiful island of Inishere. And we wanted to come today together to reflect on the event and talk about what it meant to us and what the impact of what it was and what we're going to do next time. And I want to go to you first, Maeve, just if I can, and ask, what were your general impressions of the weekend? What did you think of those few beautiful days in Inishere where we had one bit of rain, but otherwise beautiful weather?
Like, I thought it was magical. I'm still buzzing. I'm still on high from it. People are still messaging me to tell me how much of an amazing time that they had. But look, any event that sandwiches Claire Daly and Bernadette McAlisky is obviously going to be the absolute recipe for the best event in the world, let alone Ireland. I just think there was such a huge amount of solidarity of people coming from all over, you know, Britain, Ireland, Europe and beyond, to come together to talk with us and really get stuck in. And I think particularly because it grew in size this year, you know, we had an extra 50 participants, you know, we had 50% increase of participants than last year. And that was really felt across the board. And there was a real kind of sincerity without being kind of, you know, naive, of people coming together, really wanting to get stuck in, which I just really came across. And I don't think I heard one bad word said about the whole weekend and how it was run and managed, and a huge amount of work from, you know, not just the Left Bloc team, but the Trademark team, as well as the people on the island who really, really helped us in the build up and the duration of the festival. So I feel like it was a huge success, and that other people have a huge amount of FOMO, which they should. But obviously, you know, this year we lacked the dying of a monarch to celebrate, but we were able to celebrate the anniversary of the death of a monarch at least, so there was always that.
That's always good. I mean, Sean, you weren't there last year, unfortunately. I mean, I know you were grieving terribly on the death of your monarch and you couldn't make it and you just had to stay at home, but you managed to drag yourself out of that year of mourning and the wearing of black to join us this year on Inishere. What did you think? Yeah, so you've got nothing to compare it to, so what were your general impressions of your first time at Scolcus Cli, and I think your first time on the island?
Yeah, I've just about got over the death of Lizzie Windsor. But yeah, as you say, I wasn't there last year, and I've never been to Inishere, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. Obviously, I had that FOMO experience last year, but I thought it was brilliant. I thought the content, the level of analysis, the level of discussion and debate was of a really high standard. We had the overarching theme of climate and ecological breakdown, but all the other themes that branched off that were really good, and it all came together in the end. And everything was linked in a way that was ended up looking strategic, you know. I thought there was a real sense of togetherness amongst the participants. We're able to have, and it's a real non-sectarian space, we're able to have discussions and debates in a comradely fashion without people being denounced from the platform. I thought that was really important. Everyone I've spoken to really enjoyed the weekend. They took something from it. A lot of people said they've never been to an event like that. It's the best political education event they have been to, and they're really keen on returning wherever we may have it next year.
Yeah, I think the vibe and the dynamic of the weekend, same as last year, but this year was even better, I think. And I know that Maeve, your work for us is like, you know, tackling the far right and on doing research and political networking, but you also have a self-appointed title of Queen of the Vibes, and your role the weekend was quite important in doing things that I would never do. I remember first and second night, I think you organised a mass beach dip and swim at the beach, and something I would never have done, but everyone was buzzing about it afterwards. It was beautiful to see 60, 70 people just pile into the Atlantic Ocean when the sun was shining on the beach after what was a hard day of political education and left discussion.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, you know, what we're talking about is creating a space where we have robust political analysis, but we all have to get on as well. So I don't want a United Ireland if it's not going to be good crack. What I would say too, though, is because people have come by themselves or come from quite far away, I think they kind of, you know, provide those spaces of bonding. And I think that's not a coincidence then that the contributions weren't hostile, right? because even if you have people from totally politically different backgrounds, well, you've all like laughed at each other getting under the freezing Atlantic Ocean, so it breaks the tension somewhat. But I think those things are important, and you know, as we build what our United Ireland could look like in the future, and you know, because it's not about if, it's about when, and now what it will look like. You know, we have to make sure that we're getting along and communicating, and also having those creamy pints at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do remember when we did this before on Lusty Beg Island in Fermanagh, where we had people getting people away from their normal environment, getting people to a special place where there can be a special atmosphere. My history, my experience of trade union education is the opposite of that. Lots of, you know, pale male and grey stale men in a room, big conferences, 25 speakers, boring as fuck. And that's not what that weekend was. It felt very different, didn't it, Sean? And this year was a big part of that. It's a big part of the kind of recipe, Sean, for a good weekend, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, part of our rationale for having it in this year is to take political education out of an urban environment, out of Dublin, which gets fucking everything, and bringing it into a rural area, a rural pocket of the country that has long been neglected and abandoned by the state, and which hasn't had much engagement with the left over the years. So that's part of the rationale. But there's also something about having an event like that on an island, in that we, as you say, we've had that experience with Lusty Beg, the Betty Sinclair Winter School, over a period of, what was it, 8 to 10 years. And you do create that real environment of, like, where people interact and bond naturally, organically, just from by virtue of the fact that they can't escape the island, you know. So that's a big part of it. And we've seen that same thing in this year, where people were, you know, interacting inside and outside of the sessions, you know, they're developing relationships, they're hatching plans, and it all happens very well. It appears to happen very organically, but I think someone had said, you know, this is all very controlled, but it seems very natural. And I suppose that's the purpose, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I don't want anyone listening thinking it was Wicker Man. You were allowed off the island if you wanted to go. Like, there were regular ferries, but the point is, Inishere was really important, mate, for this, wasn't it? And also the locals and their involvement and the hand they gave us and the way they helped us out, and even their attendance at some of the events, that there was an open door for locals if they wanted to attend.
And that's exactly it. And, you know, a lot of conferences or events that are held there are, you know, closed shops. But I think we've always made a massive effort to make sure that, you know, we're not just celebrating, you know, and participating in the growth and promotion of Gaeltacht areas and, you know, kind of rural and island areas, but, you know, actively bringing people in as well to what we want to talk about. You know, the locals who came, I got to know them quite well. I was there for a lot of the summer. You know, each and every one of them were like, never in a million years would I ever thought that I would have been able to hear, you know, Claire Daly, let alone Bernadette McCalski, let alone a talk on, you know, in particular, I think Conor McCabe's talk on Irish Marxism was particularly, you know, significant for them, because they'd never had somebody come and talk to them in this environment before on that issue. So I think in all, it's a huge success, but it's also just absolutely stunning. You know, there was talk of rain maybe for a couple of hours on the Saturday, but we really were blessed with not just, you know, the beautiful weather, but a really welcoming host community. And he didn't, you know, see us as a park, but very much a part of their community, especially by the end of it.
And it was important, and vice versa. It was important too, wasn't it, that we've always kind of centred the Irish language in the events that we run, that we don't fetishise the Irish language. That we're, I mean, there were, of the 160 people we had there, there were about 40 of us who are, about 38, I think, in the end, who are, you know, who are speakers themselves, who have raised their kids with Irish, who use Irish on a daily basis. And that was important as well, to have Irish front and centre.
Yeah, and there's also at least 40 of us who are learning as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, over 2/3 of the festival, you know, understand. And, you know, we had guests from outside of Ireland, you know, from across Europe, Britain, and internationally as well. But everybody had a little book on how to say hello and thank you and, you know, all the important things that we wanted to, you know, recognise in the island, that we are in a Gaeltacht area and people will make an effort to speak the language.
Yeah, that was an important part of it, Sean, wasn't it? My favourite story from this year, and I've told you this, but I will tell the listeners, that I was at the pier and I was chatting to one of the lads with the pony and traps that take people, tourists, around the island on a, and he was chatting to me as Gaelic in Connemara Irish, and I was doing my best to understand because I'm kind of rooted in Donegal Irish. And he said to me, "Carabasso here," and like, "Where are you from?" And I said to him, "I'm from London." And then he turned to English and went, "Fuck off." And I went, no, I am. I'm from London." He says, and then he called all the other lads over in English. He says, "Here, lads, come over here. There's a Cockney speaks Irish." And that was one of my favourite memories, I think, in my life so far. Like, and we had a brilliant crack then after that, them trying to understand my bad Donegal Irish and me trying to understand Connemara Irish.
Whatever about your bad Donegal Irish, that was the most shocking island accent that I've ever heard in my life.
Well, it's just my generic Free State accent. Go on, Sean.
And they wouldn't be the first people who have like been fucking totally shocked whenever you switch from your Donegal Irish twang and the Cockney English. It's happened at various different events over the years. But no, the Irish language side of it is really important. And like, from our perspective, it's important to engage the language in a serious way and not in a way that's cosmetic. It's one thing putting the titles of sessions or the title of your event in Irish, like, but unless it, you know, it's going to have Irish content, unless it's going to have people speaking the Irish and contributing to its preservation and development in a real way, then you're not really doing anything. And I suppose it comes back to our friend Darnold Doherty, who said that our purpose is to radicalise the Gaels and Gaelicise the radicals. So that's sort of what we're trying to do with School Cush Clay.
Yeah, of course, you stole that off Martin O'Kine, but we'll leave Darren out of it for a minute, right?
Yeah.
And we all stand on the shoulders of giants, but it's so true that the use of Irish, particularly on the left in Ireland, has always been symbolic for the most part. It's never been communicative, that this is about you using the Irish you have, and not just talking about the Irish language when you're speaking Irish, talking about climate breakdown, talking about Marxism, talking about whatever you want to talk about, but through your native tongue. So yeah, I'm pleased we did that, and we're definitely going to do that again, and it's become a central part of how we think and do our work. Now, in terms of the weekend itself, I know we can't talk about every single speaker that was there. Everyone has their own highlights, and that people who aren't here will have highlights that are different to ours. But I want to ask you two, what were your, Maeve, you first, talk to me about one of your highlights in terms of the speakers, in terms of the content, and why you thought they were good and why you enjoyed it so much.
Look, I thought it was really important for Claire Daly to be able to come home, to come to Ireland and really be able to like have her say, because she is so misunderstood and misrepresented in the Irish media and even across the Irish left as well. And I think, you know, obviously there's not a huge amount of love for the European Union in the circles that we run in. So having an MEP there is always going to be chucky, but having an MEP who is, you know, absolutely resolute and, you know, rooted in solidarity and demilitarization and anti-war and, you know, really committed to peace movements, to be able to have her to answer, you know, not just to her peers as an MEP, but to political Irish people who are interested in what she's doing and how she's doing it. So I think that was, you know, a massive success for everybody. You know, she stood up to allegations of, you know, are you Putin a shill or whatever, and she was able to articulate, no, absolutely not, and here's what I think about Putin. And so I think in a way to be able to launch the festival with that, because maybe that is an issue that divides the left, you know, not just in Ireland but across Britain and Europe, you know, what to do, you know, for demilitarisation. I don't know how it's dividing the left, because obviously demilitarisation is essential. So to have her, and at the same time the TUC in Britain were debating whether or not to bomb Russia. So I think we can stand up to the British left and show, well, actually, you know, in your movements on the left, you are debating whether or not more people should die. And here we have a representative of the Irish left saying, here are the arguments for peace and demilitarization. So I think in that sense, it was a, you know, an absolute war and success to be able to have her then to communicate that.
Yeah, and just for the people who weren't there, she did get a standing ovation after a half-hour brilliant talk. But it's amazing, isn't it, Sean, that it's controversial now as a socialist to stand for peace, as to stand for people not wanting to die in their tens of thousands in a bloody fucking meat grinder of a war. You enjoyed that talk as well, Sean. She was pretty, pretty good, like, she was on good form.
Yeah, and she's really over the detail. There's not a claim that she makes without referencing the documented evidence of what she's claiming. You know, it's not a polemic. It is a polemic, but it's not a polemic that's unsubstantiated. Every single point that she makes is made with reference to the evidence, made with reference to a statement from an American general or from an EU bureaucrat, or what's contained within strategy document that's been produced by one of those entities. Like, so it was engaging, it was to the point, and above all, it was backed up by evidence.
Yeah, we had that experience a lot on the left, that people simply don't listen to what they're being told. They don't listen to the evidence. You had a great day on Sunday, Sean. We'll maybe talk about that later, where people simply don't listen to the analysis because they have preformed prejudicial views about the person they're listening to before they even start. Sean, what was one of your highlights? Now, obviously, we know what your fucking highlight was, and I'll get this term right, like, because Kostas Slavovitsis was there speaking. Sean is, I think the term is, to say he's a fanboy is a huge fucking understatement. There's other words, stalker might be another more appropriate term, I don't know, but he didn't leave Kostas aside for the entire weekend and followed him around like a tiny little puppy. But Sean, talk to us about Kostas Slavovitsis and why his talk, and it was a fucking great solid talk of 45 minutes of solid Marxist analysis. How good was it?
Yeah, look, firstly, I have to say how brilliant it was to have Kostas over after being a huge fan of his work for so long. I know Kelly O'Dowd managed to get him over to Belfast a few years ago to give a searing critique of the EU at the time of the Brexit referendum, but it wasn't until this year that we've been able to get him over. It was even better to be able to have a pint with him a few pints with him over the course of the weekend to talk to him about everything from Syriza, the development of co-ops, to the Irish language, to the ideal temperature of a pint of Guinness, which he has really strong views about. But his talk was the highlight for me. Like, his keynote talk was based on a new book that he's written with a collective of authors.
Yeah, go on about the book. The book was, I'll talk to you about the book afterwards, because he did bring 5 copies with him, and we had a competition to see who would win them, but I'll get to that one later. Talk to us a little bit about the book, because he was talking to his new book called The State of Capitalism.
Yeah, and the talk was like an absolute masterpiece. They give like a really clear-sighted and understandable analysis of the state of capitalism today, from the flatlining of production across the advanced capitalist world to the stalling of financialization, and the remaking of finance in the interest of shadow banking, to the return of the state in a big way, to the extent that it's difficult to imagine capitalist accumulation continuing without ongoing, almost permanent state intervention. And then finally, to the economic, military and geopolitical challenge that China and the other emerging powers poses to US hegemony. So it was an unbelievable talk, like not a word wasted. And everyone left the room with a much clearer understanding of where we're at. So people like Costas provide us with analysis, and then it's up to us to try to help them popularize that analysis and connect it to organizing amongst the groups that we're engaged with.
Yeah, it was a really amazing talk. I'm really glad I was there to see it. And of course, all this stuff's been recorded, by the way. Maeve can talk later on about what we're doing with all of the content, because we wanted to make sure we recorded and captured all that content, of course, for other people to listen and learn. Costas did bring 5 copies of his brand new book with him. It's not even out yet. It's not even being published. And we had a competition. The competition was anyone who would email my email address with the birthday of James Connolly. And, you know, there was no cheating. It was all above board. I got one of the books magically. I think Sean may have also got one of the books. And Sarah Cundy from the RMT was a genuine winner and got presented with her book. And there was another winner who I'm now going to announce live on this little podcast. And his name was Dave Gibney. He was actually the first person who emailed me. And I was on the way to give Dave Gibney his book. And I met Bernadette McCallisky coming out of the pub. And she says, "Where'd you get one of them books?" And I just went, "Oh, fuck, here you go." And I just handed it over to her. So, Gibbo, sorry about that, mate. And he's still whining about it. So I think we're just going to have to buy him a book. And next time we're over having a pint, Sean, with Costas in London, which, of course, we're going to do because we're now Costas' mates, obviously. We'll get Costas to sign a book for Wee Gibbo so we can stop him fucking whining, and we'll deliver it to him for Christmas, all right? Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about, any other highlights from you, mate? Give me another. I know who you're going to say, because it was just such a denouement to the whole event in terms of great speakers and great parts of the great content for the weekend. Give me one other reflection on one of the speakers.
No, I have a defined tendency, so you think you know what I'm going to say, so I want to say somebody totally different.
Go on then.
No, I think, look, we should obviously, I think, end this podcast with a reflection on Bernadette, but I also just want to champion, you know, maybe the less well-known people who came to speak, and, you know, who prepared really excellent presentations that were reflective, that were sensitive, and that were, you know, politically, you know, important interventions that were made. Like, one of the highlights for me on the Saturday, for example, would have been Niamh Noreen from the TNI. You know, she talked about the way in which European borders they're lethal, they're dangerous, they're killing. The European Union is a killing machine, even, you know, implicitly. And I think for us in the North, we have a much better understanding and analysis of that. But I think for a lot of people, particularly from the South or even Britain, they kind of have that portrayed in a way that, you know, we know about the migrant crisis, but who's responsible, and really looking at where the responsibility lies. And I think being able to articulate in a way, as I say, that it was sensitive, but also, you know, on point, was a really important contribution. But I would say, you know, all the sessions were great. I really enjoyed chairing the United Ireland session because, you know, although sadly Amy Moran couldn't join us in the end, Gibbo stepped up to talk about the trade union side of things. But I felt that the two Sean Curran and Sean Byers here, I thought, you know, the contributions were great. The conversation, like, it was so good. Lots of people had lots that they wanted to talk about. This is clearly an issue now moving forward that we are going to have to be tackling. And funny, I was listening to the Week at Work podcast and their reflection on the weekend, and it was 2 people from the South. Now we've got 3 people from, we're living in the North on this one. But, you know, they said that sovereignty hadn't really occurred to them as a question, whereas that's all we kind of talk about up North. You know, who rules us and why, and how is it done? So I think there's a huge appetite now to really, you know, bring forward those kind of debates and conversations. But yeah, otherwise, obviously, maybe you thought I was going to say Bernadette. Like, you know, we all just absolutely adore this human being. She is absolutely remarkable. She didn't have a note on her. She spoke for a whole hour nonstop. She tied in 15 threads. I think for a lot of people, you know, there might have been some things that she said that people disagreed with, but she's so formidable and so convincing that you can't find but see yourself going, oh, but, you know, she's allowed to say this because it's Bernadette. But I think it was all in the spirit of how she sees the world, and she sees the world in a certain way as somebody who's had the life that she has. And everything that she does is generous and open and giving in terms of the cooperative side of building what the future of Ireland can look like. And I think it was just sensational.
No, for Dona Mar for an end to the event, you couldn't have got better than Bernadette. Sean, any highlights from you? I mean, you spoke on that United Ireland panel. It was very impressive, and the analysis was very good compared to some of the shite you listened to about the future of this island. And the thing that came out for me strongest, because I mean, Maeve introduced it with this, but everyone repeats it, is this idea of joining two failed states, or joining a failed state with a statelet is not the future any of us are looking for. We need something far more transformative than you, and that conversation needs to start now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that session itself, like, the conversation could have continued for another hour. People were busting to sit and continue to have that conversation about some of the themes that were emerging. You know, there is a shared view amongst everyone in attendance that we don't want to bolt together two failed state, that we want to advance a transformative socialist political project, and that we need to find practical ways of bringing that about, practical ways of promoting collaboration across the left on these questions, for creating independent spaces within the pro-unity, broader pro-unity camp for advancing a socialist vision and a socialist strategy, and presenting an alternative to the forces of continuity that currently dominate the discussion. But not just in that session, every session that I attended or had any involvement with, people were really keen to continue the discussions. Like, an hour wasn't long enough. And I think that's a real testament to each and every speaker that volunteered their time to take part.
Yeah, I think that session particularly could have been, and of course it's a theme of political education for the future about what this island looks like in 20, 30 years. Sean Fearon's Tyler His talk I thought was fantastic, and I enjoyed the presentation about there's no United Ireland on a dead planet, which is the immediacy of climate breakdown, but also the immediacy of what we do about the island, the country we live in, and what we're going to do with the future of it. There were other great speakers. Go on, mate, if you want to come in, go on.
No, I think part of the reason that it was a particularly interesting panel as well is, you know, Sean was talking about more sovereignty. The other Sean was talking about the kind of climate impact, but also acknowledged there was a total data desert in the north. And Dave was talking about workers. But as soon as he said that, that really made me think, like, the way in which the north is understood is just totally erased. And that is a big part of our work now. You know, we look what's happening in Loch Ness at the minute, and the way in which that's kind of being greenwashed out of existence. And I think we have to get better now, and I don't just mean, you know, the people at the festival, but I think in general about promoting and understanding exactly the ecological crises that are happening here, because there isn't the same data or research that's going into the 26th or into Britain. But I think that's a huge, you know, thing that we should also be focusing on moving forward. But yeah, it was just great.
100%. I mean, all the research we've ever done in the past, and Sean can bear witness to this, is that information about the six counties is never disaggregated from information about the country that we're forced to be in. And it's really hard, therefore, you know, having that nuanced debate when you don't have the evidence. And it just proves that the six counties is a bolt onto that state. You know, it doesn't want us. The majority of people here don't want it, but that's certainly something that we're gonna have to return to at Left Bloc, because that's one of the biggest issues we're gonna be discussing. And as you said, it's kind of inevitable.
And also convincing the British that the UK is not a country, and whenever they look at UK policing, it doesn't exist, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, that comes to it. There's another point I wanted to raise here, and that's about the UK's legacy bill, which, of course, you reminded me before we start, which is now an act. And you drew attention to it, particularly on the weekend, by doing a great banner that was emblazoned on the side of a van. But there was also an issue there about the importance of talking about that at the weekend, but also because since then there's been total silence on the British left about that act.
I would also say, Stevie, there's been an abject silence on the Irish left as well. I think basically, you know, for people who don't know, and you probably should, you know, this bill is basically the legalization of, you know, hindsight of the killing of Irish people. It's, you know, absolutely reneged any international kind of agreements. It's had criticism from, you know, the United Nations, the EU. Not one party in Ireland supported it, North and South. And, you know, I think the only place in the whole island of Ireland that supported was a veterans group, which is no surprise. But it is about giving an amnesty to British state forces in Ireland. That's the essence of the bill. So no soldier will ever be prosecuted. And obviously in the last 20 years, we've had a huge kind of drive towards prosecution. So it's not just about justice in a kind of abstract kind of way, but, you know, material justice, if that's what the families want, to see soldiers taken through the courts. But the ongoing now slogan of the Bloody Sunday families and victim families is that there is no British justice. But I remember even when I put it on the Twitter on Left Block, I had said, you know, this is about the legalisation of deaths of Irish people, and people commenting underneath, Northern Irish, it's got nothing to do with Ireland. Now, obviously, you're going to get trolls ever, but even as I was making the banner, I was like, I hope this doesn't annoy people. And I thought, well, actually, I hope it does, because if they're annoyed at the continued British misadministration of the lives and deaths of people in the North, then they're not doing enough work, because it absolutely is a live issue and it absolutely is something that people have to get their heads around. But the silence in the British left, I may have sent a few messages and made a few enemies about silence, which isn't always the best tactic, but I'm always willing and open to talk to any organisations who, you know, want to get their head around this, who want to understand what's happening, because it's absolutely fundamental to the future of Ireland as well, how this is dealt with and how this is managed. But yeah, it's just waiting for the royal ascension now. And yeah, that'll be it. But there are court cases being taken. There are challenges from the families. But yeah, I just thought it was so important to centre that week, because, for, you know, it's particularly after a summer of partitionism and partitionisms, that we don't allow the lives of people, Irish people in the North, to just be erased and forgotten. And indeed their deaths as well.
Yeah,
their
think murders. It's important to events like that we organise, that there's a political culture in the event that's current and that's real and that's live. And it's not just some sort of, not that it was, but there's a danger of slipping into some sort of dry Marxist academic analysis, which we really enjoy. But you're not talking about things that are current, and you're not creating a political culture. As part of that political culture last year, we had a kind of a flag drop, if you like, for Palestine, and that you organised. And we did it again this year, and it became part of the sort of centrepiece nearly for the weekend, isn't it? It was a really, really nice event when we had 150 people outside with about, I don't know, 20 Palestinian flags. James Connolly turned up as well in the middle of the photograph. That's really important too, Maeve, isn't it, to remind ourselves about the relationship between our support for Palestine.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think the reason we did it last year is because it kind of fell on the Boycott Puma Day, but that changes every year. But we had a decision that it's absolutely important. You know, like, that's not going away. You know, huge amounts of deaths and destruction. And I think a lot of our political education is also, you know, I learned more about Bobby Sands in a refugee camp in Palestine than I did in Derry growing up under, you know, the John Hume era of St. John Hume. And I think that was really important. And for us to be able to kind of articulate and show that solidarity does go a huge way. I mean, I think an account with a million followers tweeted it. So although it looks maybe a wee bit like, oh, it's just a banner drop, each and every person in that photo is embedded and knows what that solidarity should not to look like in their trade unions, in their workplaces, in their universities, in their schools and beyond. You know, this isn't just a token gesture, but the fact that it is shared and remarkable internationally is really good, because people know that even on a tiny island where the population is 300, people are talking about Palestine. And, you know, yeah, so I think it's always going to be a part of what we do as well, even if it upsets some of the European trots. But
oh well, sure, look, that's something we're willing to risk.
Part of the course.
I don't want to finish before we talk about some of the other speakers as well, because I know once you name one, you kind of got to name them all. So I'm going to ask you again to talk about someone. I know that I really enjoyed Victor Figueroa Clark's talk on Allende. Of course, it was 50 years since Pinochet's coup in Chile, the anniversary of that. And his new book's coming out soon. It's called Revolutionary Democrat. And he gave a great talk about that. There was also another great talk we had Chloe Nualia from the Island Co-op speaking about the importance of democracy on the island, how the cooperative works on the island, along with Ali from Trademark and Clem Bradley from the Creative Workers Cooperative, who spoke about the importance of not just worker co-ops and social co-ops, but also our plans in terms of buying a new building in Belfast and trying to create a centre for economic democracy, which is a big part of our work at the moment. Sean, any other speakers that you want to throw in there that you really enjoyed listening to?
Yeah, well, see, I chaired Joe Guinan's session, our friend Joe Guinan from the Democracy Collaborative, and it turned out, just as he was about to start, that he realised that we had given him two titles for his talk.
He gave us two titles, so I'm going to blame him for confusing us. I'm easily confused. I've got old timers.
And for Fox 2, we gave him half an hour, and he was able to combine two talks into one. So he gave like a detailed, far-ranging and comprehensive analysis of the global political economy over the past century, right? So that was one. And then he moved in to trying to discuss the practical ways in which we can start to put in place the building blocks of a socialist economy and a socialist society. It's the line he uses on it, like building on models that you can kick the tires on, that obviously that work in practice, that have been demonstrated to work in practice. And, you know, what is it, the line of creating actually existing utopias as a means of pointing to the future. So his talk was excellent. And again, we didn't have time to have as much of a conversation that we discussion we would have liked to have had afterwards. I chaired Kai Heron's session as well. Like Kai, I've been following his work for a good while, and I think he's one of the sharpest thinkers that we have on the left. If you follow him on Twitter or if you've read his work when it comes to climate and ecology, he gave a really strong socialist critique of the land question, of industrial agriculture, not just in the global north, but how imperialism has spread those practices to the global south and continue to promote super exploitation through the food production system. And then he moved on to like what he saw as the solution, which is eco-communism, which, you know, I thought it was good to finish on that note. So I really enjoyed his talk.
Now, I'm always happy to hear the word communism in a debate being suggested as the answer to all of our problems. I should mention the two Irish language talks as well. Andreas O'Cassidy talking about Dúchlann Ó Chonaill, talking about the challenges of James Connolly and the challenges that Connolly lays down to us as people in the 21st century. And also there was a great panel with Orla McGurk and Darren O'Doherty and others talking about the importance of, as you said, Sean, earlier, the importance of Irish on the left and why there are two positions regarding the Irish language on the left in Ireland. One is to be speaking it, and the second position is to be learning to speak it, and there's no third option. So get with it, people. I think we mentioned Conor McCabe, and also Conor McCabe has two podcasts with us, so you can check out Conor and hear him wax lyrical. Mae, if you want to come in with some more, go on.
No, just telling you, I think it's the only person, you know, that we didn't mention, and obviously, you know, really important and sharp analysis of Cuba and the blockade and the kind of presentation of that in, you know, day-to-day Cuban life, but as well as internationally, how that's implemented. So that's going to be a really interesting talk, and definitely food for thought in terms of, you know, how blockades and sanctions are enacted and impacted, particularly as, you know, they're being used more and more economically. So the precedent that the Americans have set for Cuba was a really interesting discussion.
Yeah, it was. And of course, all of this stuff was recorded, Maeve and Sean. We recorded every talk in the main hall, every kind of breakout room was recorded, whether they're going to appear on podcasts or on our YouTube channel. That'll all be ready for them, hopefully, in the next few weeks.
Yeah, the Creative Workers Club, we're busy and working away. Hopefully we'll get one of them up actually this week, and, you know, we'll kind of filter them out as they're kind of coming up and ready. Dave Gibney did fire some shots on his podcast yesterday where they said that they had ownership of the Bernadette talk, but I think it's going to have to end up in an arm wrestle to decide who will get to put that out, but we'll see.
Well, if it's your arms versus Gibbo, I don't know who's going to win that one, mate, but let's...
Obviously me.
Well, maybe she'll appear on all the pods at the same time. Last impressions, folks, from the weekend. What did it left you feeling about, and what about next year? What are the thoughts for next year? Sean, you first, Sean.
Well, it shows how much of a strong base we have to build on. I just want to bring it back to the importance of political education and why we do this. Political education has been central to the building and the development of any effective socialist project we've seen over the past 100 years, from the Bolshevik Revolution through to 21st century socialism in Latin America. And by the same token, the absence of political education has been central to the defeat of the left in large parts of the world, especially in Europe, over the past 40 years. So what socialist political education does is it gives people the tools to develop an analysis of the system under which we live, to learn from past defeats and mistakes in the spirit of self-criticism, and to build on that basis. So we're trying to target the politically engaged and committed, people who you might say are preaching to the choir, but still need to develop their capacity to understand and analyze capitalism and power relations. And beyond that, we're trying to extend it, this education out to the working class as a whole in the best traditions of working class education over the past century. And that's something we try to do on a day-to-day basis in communities with trade unions and through engagement with residents and citizens. So it's in that spirit that we're looking to build, and we're looking to make next year's event bigger than ever.
Thanks for that, Maeve. Last thoughts go to you.
Oh, it's really hard to follow that because that's really lovely. But what I would say is, you know, it's hard not to feel like, you know, quite nostalgic and almost like twee about the whole thing. But I always go back, obviously, to this Che Guevara quote that, you know, revolutionary is guided by love. And I just think to feel that, like, enormous sense of like pride and joy to come away from an event that was at the same time so politically significant is such a brilliant quality that we can offer. You know, we're not just providing the space for debates and analysis and, you know, new ideas. We're also providing the environment where people can really, really develop and learn in a space where they feel like they can love and enjoy as well.
Thanks for that. To those who...
Do you hate me for saying that?
Not at all. It's right. No, it's one of my favourite Guevara quotes. I think we need more of that on the left and more solidarity and comradeship and less of the stuff that that Sean said at the start, the kind of being condemned from the platform before you open your mouth because you have a slightly different take on something than other people, you know. If there's any time for a fucking broad front, it's now, a united front. It's certainly now over the next 10 or 15 years, 20 years. Because as we all know, and as was said many times on the weekend, there is no capitalist way out of these multiple crises. We've got to come up with solutions. I wanted to announce something very briefly here. This pod will be going out on Friday, as usual, on the Trademark Podcast. There's a new podcast coming on to the leftblock.ie platform. And that's a new podcast that talks to some of the issues, I hope, that kind of come out today and come out of the weekend. And it's the relationship between the peoples on this island in particular. And that podcast is called North. It's been hosted by Steve Baker, a very good comrade of ours from former shop stewards in the TNG. Terrible shop steward, he'd admit that himself. Currently an activist within the UCU. And he's going to host that new podcast. And it's going to address some of those issues about the relationships between the people on this island, both within the six counties, but across that border, the issue of partitionism, the issue of identity. And I'm really looking forward to that because I know, knowing Steve, that it's going to be a really reflective and intelligent and careful piece of work. So watch out for the launch of North, new podcast on leftblock.ie. Folks, thanks very much for your contributions today. It's been great. I wish we could talk longer. I know that we could. And I'll see you all soon. Slán go fóill.
Slán.
That, comrades, was Trademark Belfast. Thanks so much for listening in. We'll see you soon, either in the trenches or on the victory parade. Up the workers and Slán go fóill.